2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, we find that Jackson Browne is the high mileage champ after running on empty.
Looking out at the road, rushing under my wheel. Just pass the time in the hotel rooms and wander around backstage till those lights come up and we hear that crowd and we remember.
It wasn't called Running and Empty, but it was called, something. And it was going to be a live album with live versions of songs that had already been recorded and new songs and jams and some of the hilarious things that people say. Hi, this is Jackson Browne in the studio for Running on Empty.
In 1977, highly acclaimed Southern California singer-songwriter Jackson Browne found himself to be a new dad, a suddenly single parent, and a widower following the suicide of his wife. Conventional wisdom would assume that any one of those three challenges alone could require an entertainer to put his or her career on hold indefinitely in order to provide parenting, get affairs in order, and certainly to grieve. Yet Jackson Browne did exactly the opposite. He went on tour, finding the precise structure and almost militaristic organization of a large touring band with day-to-day and even hour-by-hour decisions managed by others to be comforting. And Browne found solace rather than solitude in the extended family of band members, lighting and sound technicians, riggers and roadies. From his 1972 debut, Jackson Browne had won praise as a superb song craftsman and a meticulous record maker, placing no less than 3 of his earlier studio albums onto Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 albums of all time list. But by far, his loosest, least technically perfect album, Running on Empty, released December 1977, outsold all 3 of those combined. In the studio, I asked Jackson Browne how it happened.
Matter of fact, when I had this idea, I sort of wrote it out on a page, almost like a description or like an ad in the old-timey sense of an ad, you know. It wasn't called Running and Empty, but it was called, something. And it was going to be a live album with live versions of songs that had already been recorded and new songs and jams and some of the hilarious things that people say. And some of the ridiculous things. It was almost like a Mothers of Invention album, you know, where you hear these ridiculous voices come in and it cuts to this little bit of tape where someone says something stupid and mysterious. So it was going to be a real kind of mosaic of life on the road, and I thought there would be a double album, and I was much more interested in the songs that were the new songs. And when we started listening to things back, really within a couple of shows, everybody was really grooving to the new things and saying, man, this, you know, just maybe the album ought to just be this, you know. Maybe it ought to. I remember Russ Kunkel listening to this stuff next to a pool somewhere in Colorado, saying, "Man, this is great. Well, let's just do this."
Looking back at the years gone. everyone I know, everywhere I go. People need some reason to believe. I don't know about anyone but me. If it takes all night, that'll be alright.
Jackson Browne's debut album was released in 1972, and with every year and every release, his following grew, drawn to his quiet and obviously heartfelt music. Jackson's breakthrough album in commercial terms was The Pretender, which went to number 5 in the American charts in late 1976. But after The Pretender, Jackson Browne felt a need for a change.
What happened was that I used to write in a very narrative form. I used to write in the first person and tell stories. Like on my first album, the song Song for Adam literally is exactly what the song says. It's an iambic pentameter, and it sort of says in a rhymey, sing-songy way, you know, exactly the truth. I mean, I didn't know this guy too well, and we traveled together, and at a certain time I heard that he had died, and I always wondered if he, you know, if it wasn't a fall of some kind, or if he had jumped, and just sort of the discussion of suicide. Anyway, I wrote in this narrative form, but I found that after so many people knew, so, you know, I mean, stories were written about the events of my life, that I didn't feel like I could really sing that. I mean, I really wanted not to sing that way anymore, write that way anymore. And I had to kind of change the way I wrote. So the record I made next was about another aspect of my life, which was touring and being a musician about the relationship with an audience.
Many people assume the songs on The Pretender were about the suicide of Jackson Browne's wife. Many assume that to this day. In fact, most of the songs have been written before his wife died. But that didn't stop the rush of magazine articles and pop critic psychoanalysis. The spotlight's glare got a little too bright.
I kept thinking, as I made The Pretender, I thought, oh, you know, it's what's in my heart, you know? It's what was going on. But I was terrified, really, because there I was talking about the most difficult things to talk about, because it was so public, you know. I was used to trying to delve into myself and talk about what mattered, but only that was only as an anonymous person, really, you know. Or, you know, it's to be encouraged. I mean, someone singing a song that really gets to the heart of the matter or cuts to the bone. unless everybody's so familiar with that person's life that they think it's about that person's life instead of any life. So I was having difficulty maintaining that kind of attention and celebrity, you know, and I had just done a world tour and was planning to make this live album, and I think Running Empty really reflects the kind of weariness of that kind of attention, if anything, you know. If there's anything specific I was saying, it was that I just don't know if this was what I meant to do.
Highways and dance halls, a good song takes you far. You write about the moon and you dream about the stars. Blues in old motel rooms, girls in daddy's cars. You sing about the nights and you laugh about the scars. Coffee in the morning, cocaine afternoon. Talk about the weather and you grin about the room. Phone calls long distance to tell you how you've been. You forget about the losses, you exaggerate the wins. When you stop to let them know you got it down, it's just another town along the road. Ladies come to see you if your name still rings a bell. They'll give you damn near nothing and they'll say they knew you well. So you tell them you remember, but they know it's just a game. And along the way their faces all begin to look the same. When you stop to let them know you got it down. It's just another town along the road. Well, it isn't for the money, and it's only for a while. Talk about the rules and you roll away the miles. Gamblers in the neon, clinging to guitars. You write about the moon, but you're wrong about the stars. 'Cause when you stop to let them know you got it down, it's just another town along the road.
The Road, from Jackson Browne's album Running on Empty. The song was originally written and recorded by Danny O'Keefe. Jackson's version on the album was dedicated to Judy Durge, the wife of keyboard player Craig Durge.
Yeah, I knew that song real well, and I thought that it talked about life. on the road, not as it was for me at the time, because Running Empty was made at a time when suddenly we were playing, you know, like really big auditoriums and basketball arenas and the Sheds, and it was right at a time when we started to make a lot of money. But it really sort of typified what life was like to you know, had been like for the last 5 or 6 years, touring and, you know, sharing rooms or having two bands on a bus, or, you know, finding yourself with days off and absolutely nothing to do or no place to go or stranded someplace. It talked about life, a life that I knew really well. Certain friends of mine thought it was really wrong of me to do that song. Craig's wife, Judy. If Judy were listening right now, she would say, "That's right. That's right, Jackson. And you know it's right, and you shouldn't have done that song." But she gave me a lot of trouble about it, and for that reason, I think I dedicated it to her.
Rolling down 295 out of Portland, Maine. Still high from the people up there, feeling no pain. Gonna make it to New Jersey, gonna set it up and do it again. I got a bottle of wine,
that's it all.
I got a broken white line,
I'm still sober.
Ain't nothing but time between us, silver eagle and that New Jersey line. Well, it's a rock and roll band or a movie, you can take your pick. It ain't bad work if you can get it, but you gotta make it stick. We're getting any kind of sleep on this rolling hotel, that's the trick. I got a bottle of wine,
pass it over.
Got a broken white line,
I'm still sober.
There ain't nothing but time between Silver Eagle and that New Jersey line.
The songs on the album Running on Empty were recorded in all kinds of strange places. For instance, Nothing But Time was recorded on a moving tour bus somewhere in New Jersey.
I don't know how they recorded it, because you couldn't hear anything in there above the sound of the motor. I mean, we were in the front where you would sit, you know, and the guys recording were in the back over the engine. I had this tour manager, his name was Howard Burke, and that may be the last tour that he and I worked together on, because he's too nice of a guy. He was really too nice of a guy to make it as a tour manager. He had this great thing that he always played on guitar, and that's what we wrote Nothing But Time around. And in the end, he couldn't be found when it was time to record this thing, and he just wasn't there, and his little thing that we wrote the song around didn't get on there. It was this kind of cool guitar picking thing. It just didn't make it onto the record, but we had written the song, you know, to have him playing it, like you would have had the road manager playing guitar on a cut. In the end, we went driving around and Cooch played guitar. We recorded that on the bus. Russell played a cardboard box for the bass drum.
It's just a bottle of wine.
Pass it on.
It's just a broken white line.
I'm still sober.
It's just a whole lot of time in the twilight zone. And these friends of mine.
Didn't we solve the world's problems?
Solve all the world's problems.
What did we say?
I can't remember.
Here's what I'll do. I see I gave the bus to Buddha to take down to Boston and hang out at Jimmy Lucas' place and fix dinner for everybody and make it down in New Jersey by night. So,
well, you know.
I'll give the crew the plane tickets and we'll get on the bus and then we won't have to face the leisure suits at the airport. You were trying to tell me about the best looking people, whatever they are.
You don't understand, man. You have to understand that when we pull out of this town, the cats that were the best looking cats in this town before we came are gonna go back to being the best looking cat. Never thought about that, did you?
No, I must say, I never thought
Think about it, wouldn't you?
Nothing But Time was recorded on a moving tour bus while heading south to the next gig. Coming up next, the forecast calls for thunder. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and online anytime at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, In the Studio with Jackson Browne, his biggest seller, Running on Empty.
Welcome back to In the Studio. This is Jackson Browne with Redbeard.
Thank you. Now, of course, the performances from Running on Empty are some of Jackson Browne's best-known work, but it's important to remember that when he actually performed them live for the album, audiences had never heard them before. For example, the song You Love the Thunder.
Like, we're not doing that song right now, but if we were to do it, I'm sure it would get a really great response, the opening chords, because people are really ready to hear what they know in a live show. And it's always a struggle to try to get as many of the new songs that they don't know as well into the show, even though you know that next year people will be really excited to hear those too. I mean, the one that's on the record and the one that you know is the recorded version, which sort of went over like a lead balloon. Because, well, no one had ever heard it. We were out there doing songs that no one had ever heard.
When you look over your shoulder, behind. When you think it over, do you ever wonder what it is that holds your life so close to mine? You love the thunder and you love the rain. What you see the dark side of the man. You love the thunder and you love the rain. You know your hunger like you know your name. I know you wonder how you ever came to be a woman. a crazy longing that time will never take. You love the thunder and you love the rain. You know your hunger like you know your name. I got your number if it's still the same. And you can dream.
The most haunting song, certainly an anachronism from Running on Empty, is Cocaine. The song was recorded in a motel room in Edwardsville, Illinois, with new bittersweet lyrics added to Reverend Gary Davis's original song.
Life changes. If you get, straight, you know, I don't take drugs anymore, and I guess I've got a new version of Cocaine that I do live sometimes that reflects the change in attitude and priorities and a lot of people told me they really, I'm glad that I did, because it was a very ambiguous thing, you know, our version of Cocaine on Running Empty. But I think it belonged on that record, because in those days Cocaine was sort of a lark, it was a laugh, it was sort of all pervasive and not very serious yet, you know. We had not hurt ourselves too badly at that point, you know.
You take Sally, and I'll take Sue. There ain't no cocaine running all around my brain. Heading down Scott, turn up Main, looking for that girl who sells cocaine. Cocaine running all around my brain. Come here quick, that old cocaine about to make me sick. Cocaine ran all around my brain. My doctor at the hospital, he said, son, it says here you're 27, but that's impossible.
cocaine. You look like you could be 45.
That's guitarist David Lindley saying, "It takes a clear mind." Here's Jackson Browne.
And I'm sure what he was saying is like, it takes a clear mind to be a musician, you jerks. You know, like, are we going to record this song like 60 more times and then go at it tomorrow night when you're really, you know, not too loaded? You know, what happens to be funny to you when you're abusing drugs is the pain. And there are certain real things that get said and everybody laughs about, you know, that are sort of ominous. I don't like the idea of the song being sort of out there for people to, you know, misinterpret. I think that it needed to be updated. So I don't know how it'll come out. Truth is that I've lost some very good friends to drug abuse. Lowell George, I sometimes think, I see some of these amazing advances in technology, and Lowell was a great record maker and an inspiration to everybody that worked with him, and he had all kinds of tricks and did a lot of editing and did a lot of, you know, he did everything to make a record happen. I think that he would have really loved the technological advancements, you know, all these great home recording machines and effects and things. And I miss him terribly, and I think it's a real shame that he died, and I know that he would not have if we had not had such a feeling of invincibility about ourselves, if we understood how fragile we are.
Jackson Browne setting the record straight about the song Cocaine. Still to come, people stay just a little bit longer to hear Jackson reveal the hilarious story behind the song Rosie, plus the anthem to concert audiences as well as road crews who make it all happen. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Jackson Browne, his top seller, Running on Empty.
Hi, this is Jackson Browne in the studio for Running on Empty.
And I'm Redbeard. One of the things I've always wanted to know about the album Running on Empty was if other guests complained when they were recording songs in those motel rooms. Jackson Browne tells the truth.
What we did is we booked all the rooms on either side and above. It was only a two-story motel. You know, on tour you have at least, you know, 20, 30 rooms in the hotel, and we just made sure that we had all the rooms above and below and around. But there was this youth choir staying at that hotel. And we tried to get them to come sing on some of our songs because I thought, that would be so great. There are all these kids. They're all over the place, and they were young. They were from about 15 to 18. As soon as the director of that choir, some church choir, saw all these kids out there in the parking lot with microphones and all us really mangy-looking ne'er-do-well types, you know, like standing around getting them to sing, you know, stuff that was definitely not spirituals. They called him back in and wouldn't let him, you know, have anything to do with this. Hey, you know, you're making me want to do this again. This would be, you know, it was a lot of fun.
But she was standing at the loading when the trucks rolled up. She was sniffing all around like a half-grown female pup. She wasn't hard to talk to, looked like she had nowhere to go. So I gave her a pass so she could get in and see the show. But I sat her down right next to me and I got her a beer. While I mixed that sound on the stage so the band could hear, more I watched her, watch him play, the less I thought of to say. And when they walked off stage, the drummer swept that girl away. But Rosie, you're alright, you wear my ring. When you hold me tight, Rosie, that's my thing. When you turn out the light, I got to hand it to me. Looks like it's me and you again tonight, Rosie. Well, I guess I might have known from the start she'd come for a star. Could have told my imagination not to run too far. Of all the times that I've been burned, by now you'd think I'd have learned that is who you look like, not who you are. You ought to keep that in mind. Rosie, you're alright, you wear my ring. When you hold me tight, Rosie, that's my thing. When you turn out the light, I got to hand it to me. It looks like it's me and you again tonight. Oh, it looks like it's me and you again tonight.
The song Rosie, the story of a young man, taking matters into his own hands. Here's the part of the story we can tell in mixed company.
What happened was that this guy in our crew, who was the monitor mixer, had found this girl hanging around the load-in, and she was real pretty. And she looked kind of like, it's just like the song says, she looked a little bit stray. She sort of looked like she was, you know, didn't know quite where she was going, or maybe she'd get into the show. You know, she looked kind of like a runaway. And so he had her sitting next to him during the whole show. And at the end of the opening, it wasn't in my band, but the opening act, the drummer who began noticing this girl through the whole show, and he's not the front, he's not in front, he doesn't have to do anything but play drums and groove, and he starts looking at this girl. And as he walks off stage, he just scooped her right up. Clean, you know, clean getaway. So what he did is Penny nailed the guy's door shut. So he's in his hotel room with this girl, and what you do is you put pennies in the door, like the little crack of the door, you know, all the way around the door, so it won't open. I mean, it's virtually nailed shut, because with that little space between the door and the door jamb filled with pennies, it really won't open. So the guy couldn't get out and had to call. And this girl was pretty young, I think. So it was his revenge, because he sat there in the bar really, really, you know, like saying, you know, I spent all that time talking to that girl and I know she liked me, but how's she going to resist that handsome drummer coming by and sweeping her away?
Rosie wasn't the only song from Running on Empty that was about the members of the crew. The most famous, certainly, is The Loadout, a musical tribute to the guys and some gals who set it up and tear it down.
I've always been real close with my crew. As a matter of fact, the guy who's my manager now used to be... Matter of fact, lines like, the first to come and the last to leave, you know, come from him. His name's Buddha. And he's, you know, he's a guy that you wind up spending an incredible amount of time with people that you get to know because of the closeness, you know, you might not... you know, these guys work really hard. And they, and at least in those days, they did really make practically the minimum wage. They, you should see what these guys from Shoko used to drive around in. Is like a can, is like a sardine can on wheels. They used to stack these guys like, they used to drive around in a camper, six guys in a camper. And they just practically, and they weren't in a bus or even a van, you know. And these guys would be leaving the gig and you'd see them crawling into this little space and they were getting in there for an 8-hour drive to the next gig. And I just think, oh man.
The medley of The Loadout and Stay, an old song by Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs, was one of Jackson Browne's biggest hits, and the album Running on Empty made it to number 3 on the American album charts. The song, according to Jackson, was just his way of saying thank you.
Was just to say, we're here for you. You know, we're here because you guys came. Because you bought tickets is why we're here. And the whole institution of the encore is a little bit false anyway, you know? I mean, basically... The thing is that you leave the stage and people clap to get you back. And they have to basically not clap at all for you not to come back. They barely clap, you know, you rush back, you know, and if they clap really strong, you sit and bask in it a little bit, you know, and then go back. But it's a way of sort of gauging how you're doing. Well, we did this song, it was always after the second or third encore, and we did it in a sort of dramatic way, like as if everybody was gone. And it was a way of bringing everybody back. And it was also a way of saying, you know, we want to keep playing. Because after it's over, it's over. And then that's, we have to wait again, you know. It was a way of telling the audience that we were there, you know, that we... It's a way, it's like a love song to a crowd.
Now the seats are all empty. Let the roadies take the stage. Pack it up and tear it down. They're the first to come and the last to leave, working for that minimum wage. They'll set it up in another town. Tonight the people were so fine. They waited there in line. And when they got up, the show, and that was sweet. But I can hear the sound of slamming doors and folding chairs, and that's a sound they'll never know. Roll them cases out and lift them amps, and haul them trusses down and get them up them ramps. When it comes to moving me, you know you guys are the champs. But when that last guitar's been packed away, you know that I still wanna play. So just make sure you got it all set to go before you come from my piano.
Loadout stay, you know, when everybody claps, when I say, just make sure you got it all set to go before you come for this piano, and everybody claps, they're clapping because Lindley walked out there just then. And I know this to be true because the next night, he didn't walk out there at that moment, and no one did anything. No one clapped. People really tend to know what they know, you know, what they're really familiar with.
But the band's on the bus, and they're waiting to go. Gotta drive all night and do the show in Chicago or Detroit, I don't know. We do so many shows in a row, and these towns all look the same. We just pass the time in the hotel room and wander around backstage till those lights come up and we hear that crowd and we remember. Tracks and cassettes in stereo. And we got rural scenes and magazines. And we got truckers on CB. And we got Richard Pryor on the video. We got time to think of the ones we love while the miles. Seems too short is the time that we get to play. People, you've got the power over what we do. You can sit there and wait, or you can pull us through. Come along, sing the song. You know that you can't go wrong. 'Cause when that morning sun comes beating down, you're gonna wake up in your town. But we'll be scheduled to appear 1,000 miles away from here. People, stay just a little bit longer. We wanna play just a little bit longer.
I'm Redbeard. People stay just a little bit longer, and I'll turn out the lights after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest, Jackson Brown. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.